Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. It is a beautiful Monday morning. It is a football Monday morning in every single sense of that word. We've got college football going on. It's week one of the NFL. We've got mock drafts out at thedraftnetwork.com. The mock draft machine is running.
Hello, people!
At thedraftnetwork.com. What are you still doing just sitting there? Continue to listen to this podcast. Don't you dare turn this podcast off. But get to your nearest computer and or mobile device and head over to thedraftnetwork.com and do your first mock draft of the 2020 NFL cycle. Ben!
Hello, sir.
How you doing, my friend?
Trevor, I'm slightly on tilt. I gotta be honest. When Texas Tech failed to cover 33.5 by losing by 34.
Ooh.
I was okay. I was like, listen, we all take them on the chin in week zero. It's fine. And then Oregon State came around and lost by 16 on a 15.5 point spread by going for two twice and failing to get it both times. Trevor, ask me why they went for two.
Ben, why did they go for two?
No freaking reason. They were never close. It was no one scored any field goals. They just like wanted to wrap the 2-point conversion. Well, obviously they were outmatched by one of the states, like, you know, trying to get points where you can.
Sure.
But they did it twice just to like see, right? Missed it both times, and then they scored late in garbage time to get it to 17. And I'm like, listen, it's 1:30 a.m. I'm like, listen, try it a third time. You're not gonna win. Keep repping your 2-point conversions. Work this out. And they kicked the extra point and lose by 16. So then, Trevor, I was a little heated. I was a little upset, but I said, you know what? Saturday's going to be a good day. And Saturday was a good day until the Oregon Ducks fled and controlled the whole football game, Trevor.
Yeah.
The football game is 60 minutes long, and they were covering for 59 minutes and 51 seconds.
Yeah.
Listen to me, Trevor. I was not a happy camper. I was a sad camper. I was an upset camper. It was raining, and I was grouchy in my tent, which did not have the tarp properly put down on the floor, so there was groundwater coming in, and I didn't have one of those cool little kerosene thingies that you can make the little oven just right in the thing. I couldn't light a fire because of wet wood. Upset camper. So, yeah, I had a good first weekend of college football. How are you?
No, it's great, man. And this kind of emotion is literally It's why we love this, right? This is all so much fun. I sat on my couch, Ben, from, I think I popped my first alcoholic beverage at 8:30 a.m. on Sunday, or on Saturday, and I proceeded to not move outside of a 10-foot radius of either my living room and my kitchen, which are connected, for then the next, doing math here, like 16 hours, 18 hours, something like that. And that was, you know what? I had to do it. Had to do it on the first weekend because I don't know how many of those weekends I'm going to get covering the Buccaneers and everything, so I'll be on the road for some of them. So I got to cherish my Saturdays on the couch. Ben, it was an exciting weekend of college football. Not as exciting as I guess it could have been for some of your bets, but that's kind of why college football is so wacky. There were a lot of scouting notes and takeaways from this weekend. Was there any that I want to give you the freedom here? Is there one that, because we obviously have a finite amount of minutes that we could spend on the show, is there one or a couple that really like stood out to you that you want to get to right away, like some scouting guys?
Yeah. Do you want to call it like let's call it running to the tape? All right, so we each come with a player who's got us running to the tape, like a player I saw him play this weekend. And because I had no idea, like Jonathan Greenard for you last weekend,
yeah,
I was running to
totally,
the tape, right?
Totally.
Okay, so I'm running to the tape for Isaiah Hodgins, wide receiver from Oregon State.
All right, there
brother,
we go.
6'4", 215, and loosey-goosey. I'm in. I don't need to see anything else. We had a little shake route to a fade. There was a drive where they had 75 total yards, and he had 71 of them. And it was a bang eight post where he broke the corner's ankles, just cleared straight out into open waters, you know, no one near him. He like gets a drink on the sideline, comes back on the very next play, little shake release of the line of scrimmage, inside, like outside, inside, back outside of the fade route, catch the back shoulder fade on the sideline, goes to the sideline, a little quick drink of water, comes back in, follow route, little double slants right there on the goal line, catches it, big body through contact, touchdown. I mean, he dominated for four quarters for Oregon State, a team who, as I kind of brought up a little bit earlier, has some weapons, like a team that I don't dislike this year. They're not going to be able to really hang among the Big 12, and we get that. But Hodgins, particularly now, is their most significant NFL draft prospect by a mile, right? This is a Biletnikoff Award winner, a Biletnikoff list sort of a guy, junior who just showed up. He's the player that I'm really excited to go back and watch for this team. Clear NFL size, clear NFL traits. And, you know, me in the Pac-12, I had heard, you know, oh, Isaiah Hodgins is kind of good. I was like, yeah, okay, sure.
Sure.
This is, no, we got juice for sure.
Yeah, I have a couple of guys. The guy that first pops out to me that, like, I can't wait to go watch his tape of is Aaron Fuller from Washington. After seeing that unbelievable one-handed catch in the end zone. Holy cow, man. That was – I just saw that highlight. I didn't even watch a lot of that Washington game. And I just saw that highlight, and they showed a bigger clip of highlights throughout. Looked up his stats afterwards. I know he had two touchdowns in that game. I think he had – what was it, five catches, I think right around 70 receiving yards, something like that. So he didn't even lead the team in receiving. But, dude, when you could do stuff like that, if you guys haven't seen the one-handed catch that Aaron Fuller had from Washington, they were playing against Eastern Washington, so not exactly the most stout competition. But I will say, another scouting note, Jacob Eason, 350 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions. Good start. Good start. But Aaron Fuller, man, I just it's such a great receiver class that I think – by default, there's going to be a lot of players who we're just not going to hear a lot of because it's hard to take in a lot of information as it comes through a fire hose like it does on Saturdays, right? And there's going to be a lot of guys who are already notable names who we're going to hear about every single week, and some of the guys that are going to be balling out, we might not hear about till like the middle of the year. So y'all listening, it's up to you guys to, if we're not talking about a guy that is really balling out for a team that either you watch every week or that you care about or that you just noticed or whatever it is,
hit us up
on Twitter. Like, let us know. Because there's only so much that we could take in on Saturdays. We do our best job to get as many guys as we can and then throughout the week studying some tape. But Aaron Fuller is one of those guys who I heard of, I watched a little bit of when we were doing the summer scouting series, but I thought he really balled out this weekend. So I loved seeing that. The other guy, I'm going to give you a bonus guy, Chuba Hubbard. From
Chuba Hubbard, dude. I tried to tell
you did
the people.
Yeah, you did.
Trevor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Is it Does Chuba or is it Chuba? Any, Which one is it?
I thought it was Chuba for the longest time because Chuba Hubbard, first round name, but unfortunately, it's Chuba.
Okay, so like I'm watching this game, right? And I knew that this Oregon State Oklahoma State game was going to be a shootout. Like, I knew it was, like, defense is optional. Like, leave your defense at home kind of a game. But this dude looked... I watched some of his tape, and I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, I saw some things. I liked his vision, but I did not think that he was smoother and athlete enough to make this happen. And holy cow, was he really good this weekend. He was fantastic. Some people were throwing out the Arian Foster comp to me right away, and I was like, all right.
I saw that, and I was like, listen, woo. I get that he's tall, but let's, like, relax. The one thing that I'm still at with Hubbard is he's great at getting into the second level. I think the vision, the explosiveness, the contact balance is there. I need him to start beating that last man a little more consistently. And once we get there, you know, it's sky's the limit. But my biggest thing for him right now is getting into that second level, getting into that third level with a plan and then the athletic ability, namely the long speed, right? Not just the explosiveness, but the open the stride long speed to get past that last guy, break that last angle, and really hit some more home runs. Because he had some big explosive plays, there's no doubt. But he had a lot of 8 to 10 yard, you know, 7 to 12 yard runs where I really felt like we could have been looking at 20 plus yard plays if you could just get that last guy, if you could just shake him. So that's what I'm watching for this year for Hubbard. But I'm really glad he had that strong opening weekend
because
this was a guy who I've been excited about for a while, as you know.
What was his final stats? Shoot, I'm trying to look it up here. What it was
like,
because he had I think 213 yards with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. And I was like, this guy's going to break the rushing record.
330. Yeah.
I'm about to witness history.
Okay, no, that's the combination of him and Tylan Wallace, who, by the way, Tylan Wallace, I tried to tell the people, Trevor.
Oh, dude, come on. If you look at Tylan Wallace and can't say, okay, there's a damn good football player, I don't know what I got for you.
221 rushing yards.
Wild.
Which is an average of 8.5.
Very, very casual 8.5.
And 3 touchdowns.
Smokes, man.
Listen, you want to say it's the Oregon State defense, and it is, but it's not like a man isn't playing in the Big 12 this year. Listen, and the thing is, what he has that Justice Hill never had is a true athletic threat at quarterback, and they incorporate a lot more quarterback run, which is going to make boxes lighter for Hubbard, which is going to lead to some highly, 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 highly explosive stats. So Hubbard's a name to watch.
What'd you think of Nasruddin from Florida State? Did you get to catch a lot of that?
I did not get to catch a lot of that live. I did not have Florida State Boise locally because I was up in Michigan, which devastated because that game, obviously the ending was tremendous. I saw the highlight plays for Nasruddin, which were the pass breakups, the forced fumbles.
Yeah, man.
And listen, I have a meme holstered for Nasruddin next time he does something important. And all I'll say is, next time there's a good Hamza play, safety out of Florida State. Next time there's a good play, at Benjamin Solak on Twitter. I'm ready to get a takeoff.
Who is the... You know what? This could be a reoccurring segment. I like these reoccurring segment ideas. We're going to keep this going. Yes. Who is... and I think the Dan Patrick Show does this. They do, like, best thing I saw this weekend or something. Like, that's something that... I can't remember if it's Dan Patrick Show or some other podcast that does that. I want to start something where we have our segment that we already talked about where it's like, hey, what guy did you see or you almost discover for the first time that really had you run into the tape? Now I want to hear who's the best prospect you saw this weekend? Like, who balled the hell out? Because for me, it was DeAndre Swift. That's who I thought was fantastic. He was sitting here in almost like a carry share for Georgia against Vanderbilt. And every single time DeAndre Swift touch the ball, it was different. It just felt different. Swift ended up leading the team in carries with 16, but Brian Herrien had 12, Zamir White had 5. I mean, like, they were really splitting it up, I think, as the game went on, and even they weren't super ready to just go and commit to Swift early on in the game. But Swift averaged 9.2 yards a carry. He didn't even get the touchdown on the ground, and he had 150 yards off of 16 carries. Long of 36. I mean, like, this dude, he just played so well. It was different when the ball was in his hands.
No, I didn't get too much of the Georgia game. Again, Adam Market. That was another cover that I lost on the fourth quarter, in case anybody cares. But obviously, Swift is a good guy. I'm going to stick in the running back room. I'm not sure he was the best prospect I saw this week, but he deserves mention because I think he's quite a good prospect who doesn't get a lot of attention. We were nuts for freshman running back Stephen Carr out of USC in 2017. We were bananas cream pie. And then into 2018, goes down with injury, isn't able to get back healthy. I forgot about him. And a lot of people, I think, forgot about him in terms of what he was able to do as a freshman. Now, he comes back as a true junior, 2019. It's Graham Harrell's the offensive coordinator. It's the air raid. Carr was out-carried by Vince Malapai 23-6. Malapai had nearly four times as many carries. Carr had 56 yards on 6 carries, so averaging over 9 yards a carry, as well as a touchdown. But Carr, 6 receptions, 43 yards and a touchdown. He is a big part of the check down game for the new look USC offense. Now, JT Daniels, awful injury. Bad injury, end of the first half. He's out for the rest of the year. Torn a meniscus, torn ACL. Talented player, looked like he was, you know, comfortable in the system. Obviously, it's year two for a very young quarterback, but I was looking forward to watching him play. Now it's a true freshman in like Kendall Slovics, some Keaton
Slovics,
so some weird sort of Slovics? Name, dude. Some dude like that.
Please anyway, tell me it's a real last. All right, hold on, I'm looking this up. Right.
Keaton Slovis.
Oh,
Slovis, Keaton.
I'm gonna throw an X in there and just start calling him Slovics.
Slovics, yeah, the Slovic people. Anyway, so now this running game matters for USC in a big way.
Oh, I mean, wait, they have another quarterback named Matt. I almost said called, like he's an animal.
Yeah.
named Matt Fink.
Yeah. Matt Fink he's been around there for a while, and he was back up to Darnold.
Matt Fink is the most 2-year starter at quarterback for Indiana name I've ever heard in my life.
I just really think it's funny because probably when he was a kid and he had a lisp, I'm like, what are you doing, Matt? He's like, oh, Matt Fink. I'm thinking over here. I'm thinking about something. Wow. Matt Fink.
Jeez.
Anyway, the running game is now big and important for USC. So it's a huge platform right now for Stephen Carr, who, again, like the out being out carried by Malapai surprised me. But I think he's going to, by the end of the season, even especially if he continues to stay healthy, take the lion's share of the carries in that backfield. If he continues to be a big part of the passing game, all the more power to him. Worth noting that redshirt junior, maybe senior, wide receiver Tyler Vaughns. Also, again, you know, Michael Pittman's the big name.
Vaughns is he's a redshirt junior.
Hey, right. So Michael Pittman is the big name of the USC receiving corps, but Vaughns, 11 receptions, 150 yards in that first game in the new system. He seems to be a big part of it. He was a favorite target for JT Daniels. So we'll see what happens with him as things go on. I like Vaughns. I don't love Michael Pittman or Tyler Vaughns, but a lot of people think Pittman is comfortably better, and I think it's closer than people think. So I'm interested in Vaughns as well for the rest of the season.
I want to start a segment where it's like, I also want to do something where it's like the thing that made it freak out the most, the name of this segment is pending, but whether it was an upset or a play or a situation, like,
yes.
What made you tweet in all caps when you watched this happen?
Tweet in all caps is the name of the segment. Made you tweet? Yeah, tweet in all caps. I mean, if I scroll back, I'll probably be able to tell you. I can tell you right now, the ending, just the general fourth quarter of the Stanford game.
Oh, I didn't see this, so I'm glad that you're talking about this.
So okay. My tweets in all caps are, what is the flag? And then the response to that being, oh my gosh, the most ill-advised play call pass attempt that should never have happened. That in regards to the fact that Auburn got into field goal range and with 16 seconds left and no timeouts, decided a whole shot against cover two with a freshman quarterback who couldn't hit the broadside of a barn all night. So that's, and the flag was about, you know, because it was excessive celebration. But anyway, the ending of the Stanford game, KJ Costello, another Pac-12 quarterback, goes down at the half with injury. He got hit on a slide. It wasn't called targeting. Very odd situation. So we got another freshman in there, quarterback for Stanford. Stanford was up 10-0 over Northwestern, and it was just ugly fest, right? It was just no one can move the ball, both good defenses, both poor offenses. Northwestern was rotating quarterbacks, which if there's anything we know, Trevor, if there's any information we've confirmed successfully over the long course of college football in this country, it's that rotating quarterbacks works every time.
I've always said that if you have two quarterbacks, you always got to rotate. I've often said this.
Never a bad idea. Never. There's just issue camp, screw spring ball, spend the whole time making no decisions, and then just go into the first game with complete uncertainty. Like, oh, who knows what'll happen? Anyway, so they're rotating quarterbacks. It's super ugly. Eventually, they score a touchdown. Northwestern does. In my opinion, they fumble the ball out of the end zone, but it was a weird review. Anyway, Stanford's got it now. It's 10-7 with 4 minutes left, I believe, in the fourth quarter. No, it's even more time than that, I'm sure. Regardless, it's late, right? It's super late in the fourth.
Sure.
Stanford's up by 3. Now, I don't know if you know, but the head coach of Stanford football is David Shaw.
I've heard of him.
And David Shaw loves to run the football from 2000 and whatever the heck he started, 11 or something like that, to 2017.
Ground and pound.
This team ran the ball 56% of the time, right, which is huge. Now, this was with Andrew Luck at quarterback, right? He was running the ball more than he was passing with Andrew Luck. And this is a guy who every year, well, David Shaw is getting some interest from NFL head coaching gigs. Why? Like, he's not – this is dumb. He's running under center, three tight end stuff. No. So, David Shaw, now he runs all the time. Last year, it took David Shaw a whole 4 or 5 games in which Stanford went 1-4 to figure out, interesting, I have KJ Costello, an NFL draft-worthy quarterback, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, Caden Smith, Trenton Irwin, Kobe Parkinson, my offensive line coach left, so my offensive line is not nearly as good, and Bryce Love is hurt. Maybe I should start throwing it. All of a sudden, Stanford got good, right? And so last year, Stanford's 55% pass. Crazy. Like, oh, incredible. All broadcast, they're lauding David Shaw. Oh, he's going to pass the ball this year. He's adjusting his philosophy. He has to change with the times to the personnel. They don't have the runners they did. They don't have the offensive line they did, but they can throw the ball. KJ Costello. Okay. It's 3rd and 12.
Mm.
3-point lead.
Mm.
In their own territory.
Mm.
David Shaw ran the football and fumbled it, and they lost it, and they
gave
it to Northwestern.
Good.
And I was dumbfounded. I said, how dare you? How dare you? This whole broadcast spoon-feed me these lies, this slander that David Shaw is somehow a different person, a different play caller than he was. We watched KJ Costello miss Kobe Parkinson 12 freaking times. They put in a rookie quarterback who can finally hit somebody down the field. For God's sake, it's 3rd and 12. And you have a 3-point lead. There were 5 minutes left in the third quarter. Shaw had a 10-point lead. He was like, listen, we got to start salting this game away.
Yeah, I have to do it.
Unbelievable that this man is lauded as one of the best head coaches in college football. It's reprehensible. And I hope he's listening. Not really, because this was mean. But that was the one thing where I was just like, are you kidding me?
David Shaw, friend of the pod. Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
I don't know if you happen to catch any of. Well, Ben, I'll set it up like this. You know, when you're going through the week one schedule of college football.
Yeah, sometimes I do.
And you're looking at the games before they happen, you know, like on a Thursday or Friday. You're looking at this up. You're like, oh, how am I gonna play my weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Week one of college football, I see North Carolina versus South Carolina. And I understand that South Carolina's biggest rival is Clemson, you know, and North Carolina's biggest rival is Duke. I understand that. But look, man, anytime you got the state name in your school name, a little bragging rights on the line, right? South Carolina versus North Carolina. The Battle of the Carolinas is what it's called. They host it in Charlotte, North Carolina now. They host it at Bank of America Stadium where the Panthers play. So it's on a neutral site. As I was watching the end of that game, which is a game that South Carolina should have won by 20-plus points,
yes.
I felt like that scene in Billy Madison where he tries to answer a question and the guy at the end says, we're all stupider or we're all dumber for having listened to what you just said. I felt like I got dumber as a football fan watching the end of this game. Will Muschamp and Mack Brown were the two head coaches here, and those are two of the most offensively challenged head coaches that I could possibly think of at this moment, okay? The way that game went down was just dumb. I cannot understand for the life of me what the hell I watched. With 5 minutes left to go in the game, North Carolina took the lead, which was just stupid enough that they were even within striking range of what South Carolina actually has for talent, okay, even with Jake Bentley. So with like three to four minutes to go, they're down four, Ben. Jake Bentley's the quarterback. The offensive coordinator starts calling like four verts every time. They've got all three timeouts in 4 minutes left to go in this game. There is plenty of time to do things. And like on first and second down, he's like, we gotta push it. And he's got Bentley over here doing these like 7-step drops, 5-step drops, trying to heave this ball down the field. Eventually, guess what happens?
Tell me what happens.
It doesn't go well. So they end up having to give the ball back to North Carolina. And here's North Carolina. North Carolina has the ball. South Carolina bleeds then all of their timeouts because they start running the ball well. They get to right about midfield. I think it's right around the 50-yard line. I think they're on I think it's right at the 50-yard line is what it was. Mack Brown runs the ball a couple times, and South Carolina stops him. Ben, there were then, I believe, 50 seconds left in the game. Okay.
45, according to Joe. I'm reading now this back in the...
After South Carolina called their final timeout with 45 seconds left in the game on fourth down, then having to punt, Mack Brown took a knee. He took a knee.
Okay.
And turned the ball over.
Now, I didn't see this. Was it like one of those like run around in the backfield for as long as you can?
No! He just took a knee! So he turned the ball over, and I'm watching this game. I'm like, this is a battle between two teams I've never wanted to see lose more in my entire life. And so they give the ball back to South Carolina, and I'm like, the fact that South Carolina even has a chance to win this game is stupid. Guess what they go back to?
Four Berts. Four Berts, brother.
Jake Bentley throws a pick. I'm shocked. I think I turned my TV off after watching that game because I needed a moment of complete silence for what I had just watched. South Carolina should have beat North Carolina by 20-plus points. That loss is so unbelievably embarrassing to Will Muschamp and that South Carolina program. That is inexcusable. It could even be that close. Two, they could actually lose. Three, the way that they went about playing offense in those last 5 minutes were just and then the fact that I had to watch Mac Brown celebrate getting a win after kneeling it on fourth down to turn it over made my stomach turn. Holy crap. Okay, that was it. Next segment. Ben, before we get out of this podcast, we're starting a weekly tradition, a weekly college football tradition. And it is called
a hallowed tradition.
I am dubbing this. And this was your idea. Got to give you credit for it. But I have officially come up with the name. This is the Ironhead Hayward Thick Boy Award of the Week.
Ironhead Hayward.
Where we recognize one thick boy in college football who did the damn thing over the past weekend.
Yes, he did.
Ben, who is your guy?
Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce to you the inaugural Ironhead Hayward Thick Boy of the Week, the Georgia Tech punter's name. All right, firstly, just the name alone is Presley Harvin III. Presley Harvin III made, not headlines, mostly just, you know, Twitter images, in the Clemson game on Thursday night because he is 6 feet tall, nice, decent size for a young man, 245 pounds.
Hefty.
He has himself a nice wide build. So when you went reading about Presley Harvin III, and you go, and by the way, Trevor, not to disparage Presley Harvin III, who was the number one punting recruit coming out of the 2017 class per Kohl's Kicking Camp, which is apparently a thing that offers
like the store
rankings.
Kohl's?
Yes, like K-O-H-L apostrophe S.
All right, interesting.
Yes, very interesting, which I discovered this by reading the SB Nation team site for Georgia Tech that covers, you know, the school, which is From the Rumble Seat, which I greatly appreciate. Of course, the Georgia Tech website itself, because Georgia Tech is such a hallowed school of college football,
but of course,
is not even like GeorgiaTech.com, Georgia Tech Athletics. It's RamblinRec.com.
Oh, hell yeah.
/roster/ Presley Harvin III. Anyway, so number one punter in the class by both ProKicker.com and Kohl's Kicking. That's like a thing, right? Now, when he was recruited, he was 230. He's now listed as 245. He has added mass in school from 230 as a punter. And according to From the Rumble Seat, it says he's aiming to continue the recent Georgia Tech tradition of big punters when he takes over for Ryan Rodwell, who was 6'2", 215, and was eventually listed as 221. So Georgia Tech, much like the New England Patriots, has a type at punter. The competitive advantage for the Patriots, left footers. The competitive advantage for Georgia Tech, looking like linebackers. And this is something that actually good old Presley Harvin III brought up, because he said that like during the recruiting trail, like he'd be at camps and coaches would ask him, they'd be like, what position do you play? And he'd be like, punter. And they'd be like, no, like really, like what position do you play? And he'd be like, yeah, I'm a punter. Like, you're not a linebacker? He goes, no, I don't want to be a linebacker. I don't want to do that. I want to punt. And so this is a guy who literally coming through the recruiting trails.
Yes.
People did not understand that he was punting. Our final fun fact about good old Presley Harvin III is that he was an all-region musician twice in high school. He can play the piano, all of the major saxophones, which I think is hilarious. And then drums, and also he says lots of different instruments. His goal one day is to own a music store, and he is majoring in the business field with the hope of doing so when he graduates. So Presley Harvin, you jazzy, thick son of a gun, congratulations for... Oh wait, no, I forgot the best part. Okay.
The best part hasn't been said yet?
The best part, okay.
Pretty sure the best part was you calling him a jazzy son of a gun or whatever that was. Holy crap. Right,
So all these things, like, you know, football, this, whatever. So in his bio, in the 2018 portion of his bio at ramblingrec.com, you can go check this out. As a sophomore, they're talking about him, right? And you know how they just, like, list, like, kind of, like, factoids? They put, like, ellipses in between, right?
Yeah.
Right. So this is the beginning.
It bugs the ever-living crap out of me.
This is the opening line of Presley Harvin III's sophomore year description for Georgia Tech. Second team all ACC. One of the nation's least utilized weapons.
Oh, my God. That's
one
amazing.
Of the nation's least utilized weapons.
Oh, Harvin... my God.
Okay. Harvin would have led the ACC and ranked 16th nationally through the regular season with a 44.3-yard punting average. But with just 31 attempts, he fell short of the 3.6 punts per game needed to qualify for the NCAA's official statistical rankings.
Oh,
so he's underutilized,
God.
Because Georgia Tech did not kick enough for him to be qualified conference-wise and nationally for his excellent kicking ability, and thereby he is one of the nation's least utilized weapons.
That is... phenomenal!
Presley Harvin III, we commend you. Welcome to the Ironhead Hayward, Thick Boy of the Week, Halls.
Yeah, we gotta remember this. PH3, first winner. We gotta remember these guys and then kind of tally it up as the year goes on. Extremely fun week of college football. Man, I'm so glad that this is back. These podcasts are going to be so much fun as we get into this. Tomorrow, we got to shift focus. We got to go back over to the NFL because these teams, they cut their rosters down from 90 to 53 this week. There were a lot of players who... young and old, were some surprise cuts, some guys moved from one place to the other, and man, while we're at it, we got to get into what's going on with the Dolphins and the Texans and now the outlook for the Seattle Seahawks
Did they
do something this weekend. We're going to get into all of that and so much more tomorrow and the rest of the week. You guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.